Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what's happening? Tonight we have one heck of a show on tap for you. It was last-minute booking as things were rocky trying to get this show booked, but we made it, and we're here. And we will be talking with three new witnesses that we have not talked to yet in reference to this Las Vegas massacre that occurred on October 1st that is now being swept under the rug, hidden from public eye. Who knows what's going on? But tonight we'll be talking with our friend Caleb, and he's a hero in all in himself, as he actually saved his friend's life and took a bunch of bullets and lived to tell the story. So we're going to talk about that story because he's a little bit of a hero on that end. Coming up here with, so what I'm going to do right now, folks, is I'm going to play this real quick. Let's do this. We'll do this real quick.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
And excuse me while I eat some Christmas candy. Merry Christmas, everybody. And as you know, I got to play my top of the hour ad so I can screen my calls. I see my guests are here. So please share this video. Get it ready. Get it out to the folks. This is an important show. We're going to rock and roll. We're going to tell these folks a story right after I play my ads and we do the national anthem. So check this out. And I got a screen to call.
Thank you for listening to Patriot Nation Radio, 347-637-3942.
Attention conservatives. Big social media is targeting conservatives like you and me in an effort to silence us and the truth. The free speech social media that you have waited for is here at LibertyRush.com. No longer do you have to be distracted by fake news. Join the war on fake news at LibertyRush.com. The official alternative with no libtard rhetoric. Guaranteed. LibertyRush.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Bray, America's favorite patriotic rocker, and you are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Network.
I never knew about at a funeral or like the last day when an officer has passed, and they actually go and the dispatch will close basically down the radio air for emergency only. And then she will call the badge number or he will call the badge number from dispatch, and obviously there's never an answer. Brave soul has passed away in the line of duty. Felt like something needed to be done or to recognize that. And that's what the song is about, basically. It's about an officer who's, you know, gone down in the line of duty and, you know, he's given his all. And, you know, when they do reach out for the last call, he answers back and these are his words. And one thing a lot of people don't know, I know a lot of cops, you know, in and out of uniform. They are very human, just like you and I. Pick and choose what laws they uphold, but they have to uphold the ones that are put in place by our representatives. And our representatives are the people that we put in office. And the same people that are out there with their signs are the same people that are putting lunatics in office. Here's the wake-up call, people. Don't come down on the men and women in blue for doing their job. Come down on your representatives for passing these BS laws and get involved in your political on a local level and fix what the problem is. Fix the problems in our laws today. Get involved in your local politics and get moving. Get moving in America. Become a citizen. A citizen doesn't mean you sit back and collect a paycheck from the government. A citizen means you are a part of the government, a part of the citizenry, a part of the voting and voicing public. And that's what I think the song says more over than anything else. And if people want to hear it, because I know they do, please go to Dave Bray USA right now on Facebook. That's DaveBray USA.
All units, stand by for a special announcement. Emergency traffic only.
11:45.
Prince William calling, 11:45. This is the final call for 11:45. Officer Ashley Gwinden, end of watch, February 27th, 2016. May you rest in peace.
While the NRA defends the Second Amendment, the American brand fights the propaganda war. My name is Scott Kesterson, and I am president of the American brand. The American brand is a next-generation media, education outreach, and political action training organization designed for Red State America. We are an organization built on the inalienable rights guaranteed in our Constitution, on the core values of hard work, on integrity, and on a deep commitment to faith and love for country. The left is working tirelessly to have you believe that red states and red counties are second-class citizens and should have no political power. Nothing could be further from the truth. The American brand has been built to strengthen the political voice of red state small towns and rural communities, to preserve American values, and to train and mobilize the next generation of red state small business and political leadership. It is a bold vision forged from the experiences of small business and military special operations. Visit our website at theamericanbrand.org. That's theamericanbrand.org to learn more. We need your support and your donations to make this work. Join us in the fight. Thank you, God bless, and God bless this great country.
Yes, indeed, folks, theamericanbrand.org. And also check out DaveBrayUSA.com. And for social media without the libtarded rhetoric, Liberty Rush, libertyrush.com. Join today. Find me over there, Patriot Nation Radio, at libertyrush.com. And others. Good stuff happening over there. Pretty cool social media platform. Without the bullcrap, you can speak your mind. There's no censoring. You will not be blocked. You know, it's good stuff. I know the guy who created it. He's a good friend of mine. He helps the radio show out a lot. His name is Rob. You see him on the live feed from time to time. But right now, further ado, I do this here two times a show right now. Until the NFL gets its act together, we do this two times until the football season ends. This is the national anthem. Please remove your hat. Stand and join me as I salute the flag.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. Hail the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?
All right, ladies and gentlemen. The Star Spangled Banner and All Its Glory is sung by Dave Bray. DaveBrayUSA.com. Go there, be there. Don't miss it. Good stuff happening at DaveBrayUSA.com. Spoken like a radio guy. See, this is a face for radio. Again, I hope everybody had a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. New Year's is right around the corner. And folks in Vegas still have no answers and are wondering, what the hell's going on out there? People are dead, and they're playing games. Why are they playing these games? Why is it being like this? I think folks need to gather up and head out to Vegas and demand answers. Lombardo, Sir, Sheriff. Of course, remember that Sheriff Lombardo is the crooked son of a bitch in the, who's sheriff for the Bundy situation. I believe he's part of that. So he's a knucklehead in the first place, maliciously prosecuting our brothers, our patriot brothers. Bundy Payne, 2020. We'll figure it out. Imagine Ryan and Ammon Bundy, for the first time in U.S. history, brothers, president and vice president. How awesome would that be? But Lombardo, hey, my old friend Ray Colon from up north, watching the show, what's happening, Ray? Everybody on the live feed, what's going on? Danny, Jim and Linda's watching. Daniel's been a longtime fan now. Thanks, Daniel, so much. Steve, Daryl, my boy Daryl. Hey, it looks like Roy Moore passed the polygraph test, ladies and gentlemen. And we got counties in Alabama with like 2,000 residents and 5,000 Democratic votes. They're just numbers, but it's something like that, something crazy. A county with 2,000 people in it, and the Democrat guy got 5,000 votes. And of the real, true registered voters, the ones that actually registered, Roy Moore had almost 950 of them. Added a registered voter in that county, which would have won. But hey, you know, somehow 5,000 people voted in that one county of 2,000 people. So who knows what's going on there? And that's why he is not conceding this election. And he shouldn't concede this election. Yeah, you know, they're going to, I guess, confirm him on Wednesday. Bah, humbug. Well, it's kind of ridiculous because there's absolute fraud going on out there. Crazy. It's crazy. They found a van of illegals driving around in Alabama voting. They busted them. Called out, busted them. The hell is that? And they're going to certify this election? They have a law over there, a rule over there in Alabama, that after the election results, they can destroy the ballots and get rid of the ballots. They can't be counted again. That's it. Votes done. They're counted. Trash them. Get rid of them. No more ballots. They're out of here. Crazy, crazy, crazy stuff happening in Alabama. Alabama is notoriously a red state. There's no way that clown won that election. I don't believe it for a second. I do not believe it for a second. Alabama's good old boys from back in the day. Hardcore, blue-collar Americans. Bombers and stuff, you know? What the hell? But anyhow, Vegas is really ridiculous. I kind of got off. Sorry, my guests are on hold right now. Please hold, bear with me, because I'm on a roll. The situation in Vegas is really ridiculous. And we're going to hear, right now, today, I have at least two witnesses. We almost had a third. We're waiting on a guy, and we're waiting on Andrew. But I have Owen and Rick, who were there, and Caleb, who is organizing and putting together a group of witnesses and stuff so that they can get as much information and try to help the folks, the victims and the witnesses and those who are left traumatized. You know, these turds out there in Vegas have like $20 million in a fund donated by good-hearted American people who believe that money is going where it's supposed to go. But as you remember, Jassara was on my show, Jassara Lawrence, shot twice, blasted her elbow, shot her in the gut. They did surgery, and and she was released, 10 hours in the hospital. Nothing for you. You get nothing. What's happening out there? I think if you were in the crowd and you were standing next to somebody who got shot, that's just like a warrior returning from war who watched his buddy get shot. Maybe not just like this. There is big differences between war and what took place, but there's a similarity there. You see your friend or your friend's friend, a stranger, getting shot in the face. Those folks should be compensated too, and they will be. But someone will be held accountable. In all the folks that I talk to, Jassara especially, and another lady I spoke to, I can't remember her name right now, but she didn't come on the show, actually. We spoke on the phone, and she had reiterated how when they got put into this little room in the back of the casino somewhere. And there was three workers, with, you know, casino workers in there with her, with them. It was like 15 people or something. And, oh, all right, you guys work here. What's the emergency protocol? What do we do next? We don't know. We have no clue. There is no protocol. We have no escape plan. We have no drill. We do not do that stuff. This is new to us, just like you. This is happening to me. I know nothing. I'm scared to death. I'm with you in this office. We know nothing. That's right. They have no protocols, no procedures in place in Vegas for mass shootings or any kind of natural disaster, whatever might be the case. Fire bell goes off. Everybody leaves peacefully out the exits. Everybody knows about fires and fire drills. Something stinks in Vegas, folks. Right now, I'm going to fire up this phone right here. I'm going to bring in Caleb and Owen real quick. Before we get to Rick, we'll bring Rick in, too, in a minute. What's happening, folks? Caleb, real fast, tell folks about your page and what's going on with the page. And then we'll bring on Owen, and we'll start going with Owen's story, and then we'll bring Rick on.
Well, basically, Mark, you know, like the rest of America, we're watching a, you know, a major terrorist attack basically unfold, and all these people don't have any answers. I think it's pretty crazy that America as a country is just going to let it pass on by for the most part. We do plan on organizing a march and going and standing in Vegas to get answers.
And do you have an event date planned for that march to go into Vegas and demand answers? Is there an actual date?
Not
planned
one
event?
As of yet.
And is this the first mention of it on any show?
Yeah, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing it right here. Planning to get victims and witnesses to go back to Vegas and demand answers. This is very important, folks. And I think it needs to happen because we know that there's 20-some million dollars sitting there for the victims of this horrific crime, and it has nothing to do with money. But these folks should be entitled to that as good-hearted Americans donated for just that, for those folks to have, so that they don't have to worry anymore. Because, you know, when you're down in a crowd of people and the gunfire is hailing down on you, and people are falling to the ground around you, that has a lasting effect that lasts forever. And why should you have to worry about anything in any circumstance ever again except for getting well? Caleb, what you're doing is pretty cool. I think that's awesome. And we'll have to talk a little further later on when this gets planned and make an actual official announcement with date, time, place, etc. to announce to the people because
sure.
It's very important.
Yes, sir.
Owen. How are you
yes,
this
sir.
Evening, sir? Sorry that you had to go through this horrific tragedy out in Vegas. So now you're in Vegas, and what were you doing out in Vegas on a vacation?
I went to Route 91 last year. I'm involved with a group of people who we go to a lot of these music festivals. We go to Stagecoach. We go to Country Thunder. And this was my second Route 91. I was there with my girlfriend and my mother, and it was my mother's first, and along with our group. Yeah, so we had planned this months ago. You know, we always go to Route 91.
Right. All right, so now you're there. What time did you get there?
We were there the whole weekend. You know, I had various acts that I wanted to see, and you know, it's a really good venue. It's really cool that you can walk across to your hotel and back across to the venue. It's easy access. You can see a lot of artists that you want to see without, you know, the headache of, you know, other, you know, like other music festivals of just having to, you know, grill it out all day, you know, but, I got there the first day and I was there.
You could have a few too many beers and walk home. You don't have to worry about any DUIs or any trouble driving home from the concert or none of that stuff.
Exactly.
All right, so now you guys are at the concert and everybody's milling around. What's the feeling of the crowd as Jason Aldean's getting ready to come on stage right after the great rendition of God Bless America that everybody in the crowd sang. Very patriotic moment from what I understand.
Yeah, from my personal experience, I actually was Big and Rich came on before Jake Owen, and I had already seen Jake Owen previously earlier this year. So we were leaving when God Bless America was – we were standing in the back when God Bless America was being played. We went across to the hotel, had us, you know, a few more drinks, and then came back across right at the end of Jake Owen. And, you know, it's just a normal concert. Everybody's having a good time. There wasn't anything that I can point out that was a red flag or anything, that anything would happen.
Right. So the crowd was good. Everybody was in a good mood. It was a nice day. And now Jason Aldean starts playing.
When I came back up, my mother happened to have a really good spot way up front. I mean, I could have hit Jason Aldean with a piece of popcorn. And I normally don't go up towards the front like that. I'm not that, you know, I like to hang out in the back where I got some space. You know, I don't like to be in crowded areas, you know, like that. But being that she was close, I was, you know, my girlfriend wanted to go up there. So I was like, you know, we're going to have to make our way up there. And we made it up there, just minutes before Jason Aldean first started. And, you know, everybody's having a good time. I snuck in a flask. So as I was bumping through the crowd, you know, I was giving people shots, you know, just to kind of, you know, ease it over with them, you know. And, I mean, it was a good time.
Yeah.
Everything was fine. Everything, you know, nothing out of the ordinary.
And then the first couple of shots ring out, and you guys are right down in front. Were you guys like? Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
So you guys were right down in front, correct?
Yes, sir. I was probably 15 feet from the catwalk, just on the other side of the middle barrier.
Right, and to your directly to your right and directly to your left? Like, is it just people? Were you right in the middle, or were you off to the side?
People all around me. I was probably 4 or 5 people back from the actual barrier right there, and then just over the barrier was the cat. So, I mean, when the first few you know semi-automatic pops went off, I remember a guy behind me yelling, who brings fireworks to a concert? And I remember thinking to myself that they didn't really sound like fireworks. There wasn't like a consistency of how they popped. It wasn't like, you know, pop, 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 like a string of black cats. They were spaced out. So that first little bit kind of caught me odd, but you're at a concert. You don't want, you know, your mind isn't thinking anything like that. You know, you want to normalize things. And then, you know, so the first song of the first shot, you know, many around us believed there wasn't gunshots. I mean, I debated with the guy, the security that was like right in front of us across the barrier. You know, I told him, I was like, that didn't sound like gunshots to me. And he said the same thing. He said that he was from Compton, actually, and said that he jokingly said that he had heard a lot of gunshots and that wasn't gunshots. And honestly, to me, I'm from Alabama, and we got, you know, a lot of tornado sirens there. And the best way I can compare the sound is it sounded like a tornado siren with gunshot sounds playing, not like actual gunfire. I'm an avid shooter. I shoot a lot. I actually own 2 bump stocks. What I heard was not, it was not a bump stock, and it was not like a, the sound was not consistent with what they're telling us we heard, if that makes sense. You know, the media is telling us, well, this is what you heard. Everybody I know and everybody that was there with me, and that includes a few ex-military, that's not what they heard, and that's not what I heard.
Right. Yeah, I had a guest on, Renee. She was actually at the Bellagio, and her husband is a Marine. And one of his jobs on the battlefield was spotting snipers, so he listened for gunfire. That was part of his battlefield job. And he said those were gunfiring at the Bellagio, no doubt about it. I mean, if you fire weapons and you are an avid gun collector or shooter, you go to the range or you've been in the military, you know what a gun sounds like. It doesn't sound like a firecracker.
No, and you're right. Those are the very, very distinguishable different sounds.
Right. And anybody knows that, you know, anybody with half a brain. I just want to tell the folks there on the live feed, welcome to my bedroom. I've been relegated to the bedroom for this show because my sister-in-law's wedding pictures came in from Germany. Our German cousin took some fabulous photographs, and they're on the PC. So I'm in the room with a tablet and two cell phones. Welcome to technology. Anyway. So now that the first shots are ringing out, and now people are realizing it's gunfire. What's happening around you at that time? Because you're close up front. You're pretty close to the front of the stage. And I have heard reports that people right up close to the stage would be impossible to be hit from the vantage point of the Mandalay Bay. Is that true?
When the first shots rang out, it took probably and literally it probably third volley of shots before anybody actually started to move, you know, started to get cover. And
right.
I remember squatting down and going up to the rail and looking through the crowd, because to me, I thought that I was about to see this shooter in the crowd on the opposite side of this venue where I was from. I was on the left side of the stage, and I thought that it was coming from where I heard inside the venue on the right side of the crowd over in that area. I thought that that's where I heard at least some gunfire. I heard the circular sounding gunfire, and then I heard a significant difference in another gunfire that sounded way closer in proximity. And so I ran to the edge, I squatted down, and then I saw the pixels go out in the screen on the stage. And when I saw the pixels go out, I thought, man, he's shooting wild. You know, he's not even aiming. He's just blindly shooting. And then it clicked with me that they were coming from above, that they weren't coming from in the crowd, because that angle, the only thing at that angle from where I was Mandalay Bay. So the stage didn't really provide a whole lot of cover per se, because it's mostly cloth and scaffolding. However, I think the fact that the stage was there probably inhibited him from aiming directly at that stage, because I'm sure he wasn't aiming thinking, I'm going to shoot through the stage. Now, that's if you believe the media's story on this. So there were people around me that were hit. I know a girl that I've found through other Facebook pages that was, she says, 15 feet to my right, within 15 feet to my right, and she said the girl right next to her got shot in the face. So she said that she knows that in her mind that if that girl got shot where she was standing, then it – had to have either passed through the stage, through maybe the scaffolding, through maybe the cloth, or there was another shooter. And everyone I've talked to, and I've spoken to hundreds of people at different vigils, at visitations and things, and not one person that I've spoken to has without a doubt said there were multiple shooters. Not one person has disagreed with that. You know, they all believe that, you know, this one man didn't do this.
Right. Well, basic physics and training with weapons, a folk would know that a 64-year-old alcoholic, out-of-shape gentleman could not fire
off
that many rounds in 9 minutes. Physically impossible. Almost a fully trained tactical expert couldn't pull that off.
Well, Mark, let me elaborate on your point there.
Yes, sir.
I'm an avid shooter, and my buddy that was with the at the concert with me was is an avid shooter as well. And I asked him when we got back to our rooms, you know, I asked him details about the shooting, you know, what he saw, what he heard. You know, I was trying to get as much information and match it with what I was feeling and what was going on as he was. And we have talked since that conversation right after, and our conversation was so dramatically different because when we heard the story of a lone 64-year-old man, you know, that really didn't add up for us. And I told him, I said, man, I couldn't have carried out this shooting the manner he did and been as effective as he was. And I'm a perfectly healthy 32-year-old man, and I couldn't have done it. I don't believe I could have. I don't believe I could have focused my fire with a bump stock at that in such a small area. I mean, he's 500 – I'm not sure the exact distance, but I've heard 500 yards away. You know, that's Marine level marksmanship. You know, so not only executing the shooting is impossible, but doing it with a bump stock is also impossible. The guns had tripods and bipods and scopes. Anybody who shot a bump stock knows you can't use a bipod with a bump stock. You can't use a scope with a bipod with a bump stock. You can't aim effectively at anything with a bump stock, much less a crowd of people
the size of a dime.
Yeah. And Mark, I personally witnessed and held a couple that was shot, and both of them had headshots. And both of them had concurrent headshots, not something like there was one was shot, then the other one was trying to care for him, and then she was shot. They were shot concurrently enough that the other one did not know the other one had died. They didn't know the other one died. They got killed so fast together. Because when they were laying on the ground, they were still arms around each other, and they both had headshots. Now, Mark, tell me how a man with a bump stock can shoot concurrent headshots within a 6 to 8 inch grouping from 500 yards away within a time period that neither would know that the other had been shot.
Right. Man, it's crazy. And so then you're on board. You believe that because you're there in the crowd for certain. Andrew Stephen Paddock was not the lone wolf gunman that they describe in the media that you feel for sure, for certain, because you're there in the crowd and you can hear all around that there was multiple shooters and gunfire from different directions based on witness testimony and your own testimony.
Well, Mark, to elaborate on that, not only were those headshots concurrent, they were from the wrong direction. The couple was laying on their backs facing the stage, and their headshots were left to right, temple to temple, not concurrent with the Mandalay Bay being upwards and to the right of their viewpoint. They were shot from the complete opposite direction and the wrong trajectory. It just doesn't add up to me, and there's no real disputing it, because there's plenty of evidence of it. You know, I mean, at this point, when is the FBI going to come out and just say that they don't know what happened? Because I don't think they do. I don't think they know what happened. I think they were left with a staged crime scene, and that's the only story they can go with.
Right. And I got with us also joining us, folks, we're talking with survivors and witnesses from the Vegas Massacre on October 1st. As you heard, we were just speaking with Owen. He was in the crowd there in Vegas. And now we have joining us Rick. Rick, welcome to the show, Rick.
Thank you, sir.
And so... you're there in Vegas also. You went to the concert as well. And what did you see? We heard Owen, and I've heard many stories now, because this is crazy, and I can't believe that it's still being covered up, and they're not bringing the truth out. Multiple shooters all over Vegas, even an hour later. So you're at the concert, and what did you see?
Yeah, so
you know, start from like the beginning, right before Al Dean starts, where you're sitting and stuff like that.
We were on the opposite side of that center catwalk barrier from where Owen was. So we were on the right side of the stage. We weren't quite as far up close to the stage as Owen was. And I was there with my wife and three of her girlfriends. So it was me and four girls. There was five of us.
And you and Owen don't know each other at all, right? But just now, because of this incident, you talk. Before this, you don't know Owen or Rick. You guys don't know each other.
I believe Owen and I are in the same group that Caleb put together, our research group, but I've never talked to Owen. In fact, this is the first time I'm hearing his story. So,
hey, hello.
How you doing, Owen?
Yeah, nice to meet you. Yeah, same here. I don't know Rick. This will be the first time I've heard his story as well.
All right, these are two complete strangers talking for the first time. Here you go. Go ahead, sir.
I'm also 32 years old, but anyway, I was on the opposite side of that center barrier. We weren't quite as close up to the stage as Owen was, but we were still, we're on, if you've seen any of the pictures, there was an AstroTurf area on both sides of that barrier. So we're on the AstroTurf area, maybe 30 yards from the stage, at the most, probably more like 20 or 25 yards from the stage.
Right.
And those first, okay, so let me back up real quick. Just before Al Dean comes on, you know what? We're just having a good time. Some of us had taken our boots off. We were kind of sitting down between the acts. And we were just far enough from the stage to where the crowd wasn't so compacted that you were getting pushed. So we were kind of in a little bit more of a relaxed area, not as quite as dense as right up by the stage, but still way far up when you look at the total overall crowd. And those initial pops that Owen was referencing when he thought he thought they were fireworks, I'm 100% convinced they were fireworks. There was, when that happened, and there may have been shooting that happened at that same exact time, I can't say for sure, but when that happened, I saw a group of people in the denser crowd, just maybe 20 feet in front of us, back away, like push away kind of in a huddle around an area. And I could see flashes of light on the ground from the pops.
Right.
And I saw right afterwards a security guard coming from the right, close to the VIP stands that were there on that side, kind of coming up to that area to investigate what was going on. And that was only...
Hey, Rick, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What would you say your proximity was to the sound booth?
To the sound booth. We were probably, I would say, 20 yards to the right or maybe 15 yards to the right of the sound booth and probably about 15 or 20 yards in front of it, closer to the stage.
Okay. The only reason I ask is because the couple I'm talking about that I saw that had those headshots, they were almost exactly where you were. They were probably halfway in between where you were standing and the sound booth. Probably if you drew a line between you and the sound booth at the midpoint, that's about where they were.
Okay.
Right about where you heard those fireworks is right about where I found them.
That's interesting.
Wow.
So, but that's nobody scary. Really reacted to those to those initial pops. Nobody really reacted to that, except for, you know, the group of people I saw that looked like they were pushing away so they wouldn't be standing right on top of them. And my speculation is that somebody kind of walked by and dropped or sort of tossed those into the crowd and kept walking. Anyway, so when those fireworks went off, we kind of had a quick discussion in our group, like, what was that? And we determined, yeah, we're pretty sure that was fireworks. But, you know, I was a little bit uneasy. I was wondering, you know, who brought fireworks in? There was nothing like that any of the other nights. You know, there was never any fireworks or any weird things in the crowd like that any of the other two nights that we were there. So it was just a little bit uneasy. And then the shooting, the first volley actually started just 22 seconds later. And my initial recollection was about 15 seconds. And I was able to go back in videos and figure out it was exactly 22 seconds after those fireworks stopped. So my looking back on that, my thought has always been that that was either a signal or a form of psychological warfare, or it was designed to be both. But the media's story that this guy acted alone never sat with me, because the very first thing that happened that night, I was positive that somebody did that from within the venue.
Right. I've listened to all kinds of scanners and watched so many videos, as I'm sure you guys have. And one of the ones that stood out to me is, all right, we need officers, active shooter at gate 7. Officers respond, active shooter at gate 7. And that was clear as a bell on the audio that I listened to. And they didn't say it once. They said it at least twice very clearly. And gate 7, you know.
It's not the Mandalay Bay.
Other videos, each gate was numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, probably one side was odd, one side was even, or something like that, you know. And that's how they do it. I got to plug in. I'm losing my
gate. Gate 7 would have been the entrance for the
Turn right off.
Yeah.
My live feed just turned off on me.
Do you want to wait a second?
No, we're still live on the radio, so we're good.
Okay.
Good there.
So when those fireworks went off, it took us a few seconds to kind of decide what we thought had happened, and it took me a few seconds to kind of process what I thought might be going on. And I was getting ready to tell my wife I think we should leave when the first shots started going off. And at that point, it probably took me 3 or 4 seconds to really go, okay, that's not right. And I told the girls that I was with, I said, get down. I told the ones that didn't have their boots on to get your boots on, that we were getting the hell out of there. And at that point, there's people standing up all around us going, it's just fireworks. It's not real. Calm down. You know? And I said, I don't care what the hell that is. We're getting the hell out of here. I was pretty sure it was gunfire at that point. And I'm also an avid shooter. I belong to a private gun club, own lots of guns. In fact, we're going to the range tomorrow. I'm bringing my wife and a buddy of mine and his wife who's never shot. So we got down on the ground. We got low because that's what you're supposed to do, you know. You don't know exactly where the rounds are coming from. I have a general direction. So we got down and we got our boots on and we got ready to run. And as soon as that first volley stopped, we were finishing getting our boots on. And we started running, and we got maybe 10 yards before the second volley started going off. And so we got down on the ground again. I told everyone to get down. And at this point, people are actually kind of following what I'm telling them to do that aren't in my group. And so the people in front of us got down, and there was people kind of all around us that were getting down. And we're taking cover, waiting for that volley to stop. And the guy that's laying right in front of me gets shot in his upper shoulder area. And his body, like, flinches, and he kicks me in the head. And go ahead.
Wow. Well, that's kind of got kicked in the head. And did that guy survive, or was he one of the victims?
You know, I don't know. I never got a look at his face. But he was shot in an area that you wouldn't automatically think it would be fatal. But, you know, I don't know what the bullet did after it entered his body. So I'm not sure, to be quite honest with you. I was very focused on, I was there with my wife. We have little kids. We were there with two of her friends who also have kids. And the other girl that we were with, we were actually celebrating her brother's birthday, who was a Marine who was murdered when he got home installing cable by some guy who didn't know him.
Sheesh.
So my focus was to get them out of there. And that was really, I was so focused on that even they saw things that I wasn't paying attention to. I was just looking for threats, and I was looking for the best way for us to get out of there. So as soon as that next volley stopped, I said, get up, let's move, and stay low. So we started moving, and we were moving towards the back of the venue, and then to the right there was a big bank of porta potties, and there was a gate there that got opened or pushed down. I'm not really sure. So we were heading that way, and the third volley went off, and we started to go down again to take cover. And I told everyone, no, just keep moving, stay low, keep moving. So in that funnel to get out of the gate, we actually got separated into two groups. I was with my wife and her best friend, and the other two girls, fortunately stayed together. And we ended up exiting that same way, and we kept moving towards Hooters. But as we exited the gate, this is the first time I remember hearing something that didn't sound like gunfire coming from the Mandalay Bay. So right as we exited that gate, there was a police SUV that was parked right there, and it had the rear hatchback was open. And we took cover behind it for a second because I wanted to orient myself and figure out where we needed to go. I didn't just want to follow the crowd in case, you know, there were shooters stationed right outside the gate or whatever. And so as we took cover there, we took cover there for maybe 10 seconds as I kind of looked around and tried to plan a path of where we were going to go. And as we were taking cover there, all of a sudden I hear a sharp burst of fire, or three bursts, like, rah, rah, rah. And it was way more intense than the original sound that I heard, which was at this point kind of to our like 5:30 position where we were facing. And this came from like 2:30 or 3 o'clock. So it came from the area, like basically directly behind the stage to the left. As soon as we heard that, as soon as that burst, those three bursts stopped, I told the girls to move across, and there was a staff parking lot right there. It was like a dirt parking lot with a lot of cars. And we moved through that parking lot, and I said, stay low, use the cars for cover. We're going to go this way. And so we kept moving that way. We eventually got towards Hooters. And as we got towards Hooters, it just seemed like, okay, we are far enough away. So we started trying to contact the other two girls. Fortunately, they moved essentially the same way. And we were able to meet back up with them kind of on the other side of Hooters, between the Hooters and the Motel 6 there.
Was there a lot of action at Hooters? Because I've seen some videos where they had a lot of action at the Hooters.
Yeah, so there was.
My mom was in Hooters.
Yeah, I also know another girl that I went to high school with was also in Hooters, and she had some interesting observations being inside Hooters. But as we met back up kind of in between those two signs, we were trying to figure out what we were going to do, if we were going to take cover somewhere or if we were going to keep moving. And right as we met back up, that's when there was a big stampede of people running away from Hooters. And we weren't inside the casino, so I don't know what happened in there. But all of a sudden there was, you know, hundreds of people running as fast as they could to get away from Hooters. So we just kept moving east down Tropicana Avenue. And I'll tell you one more thing, because we ended up almost 3 miles away from the venue in the strip when it was all said and done. And we caught a ride back to we were staying at a timeshare a little off the strip and packed our stuff up. And we actually left that night. But as we were moving east down Tropicana, we briefly stopped at, there's parts of McCarran Airport right there that are like tourist little terminals where they have flights, like tour flights and things like that. And so we initially followed a group of people into that terminal, and we took about three steps inside and looked around and saw how confined the space was. And we turned around and left. And then as we got back out to Tropicana right there, all of a sudden there was this dark sedan was moving east down Tropicana, and it was kind of hugging the right curb there. And there was a girl that was like basically standing on the floorboard. Her entire torso was hanging out the window of the sedan, and she was pointing at and yelling and taunting the crowd as they were driving by. She was like taunting us. She had the scowl on her face. You could tell that she just hated us. And I just remember my stomach, like the pit of my stomach dropping, and just the worst feeling watching this girl like gesture with her hands and yell at us as they drove by.
That's crazy. Unbelievable. So now through all this, you wound up near the Hooters. Owen, where did you wind up after you got out and now you're away from the scene and you're safe and you're trying to connect with people? Where did you wind up going to? And did you where did you guys wind up after you got to the safe point?
I actually never left the venue. When the second or third volley started, I hopped the barrier and went over to the railing right in front of the catwalk and was trying to look and see where the shooting was coming from. And a guy near me went down, and I went down to him and noted, and I at first could not see a gunshot wound because I didn't, the wounds were really, really tiny. Some of them were big. I mean, you could definitely tell it was multiple calibers used because,
right.
One of the injuries I know was a .308 size round, and then one of them looked as small as possibly a .22. And the only reason I say .22 is because I've seen a .223 shot, and the entry wound didn't look like a .223, even though they're the same size projectile. I mean, the .22 just looked a lot more tiny. But my first thought was when I saw him go down, my mom's a nurse, so I hopped back over the rail. I grabbed my mom. I had actually put my girlfriend and my mom's friend under the stage right after about the third volley. And when I put them under the stage and then I found that guy, I went back to get my mom and I told her that she needed to come with me, that this is real, that this is, you know, this is really happening. And there's a couple of videos online. You can see me grabbing my mom and pulling her over the rail. And then I take her to one of the victims that was down right there in front of the catwalk. She drags him around the she grabbed another guy to help her drag him around the side of the catwalk towards the if you're facing the stage, it would be towards the left side of the stage. And then I went over the rail into the right side of the crowd to see if I could help anyone. And I grabbed his there was a lot of people that had huddled up right there in that corner. And the barriers weren't super high for me, but I could tell that there was a lot of women that in the panic, you could just see in their face that they were just overwhelmed and were giving up. And I just started grabbing as many of them as I could and pulling them over that barrier and directing them under and getting them under the catwalk. And I remember, you know, a couple of old ladies that you know, you could just see that they were just completely exhausted by just the overwhelming nature of what was happening. And one girl got hit. I don't know if she got hit as I grabbed her or before, but there's a spot on my shirt that as soon as I got her over, it got wet. And I remember feeling to see if I thought I had been hit and realized that it was just a splatter. And I don't know what happened to her. I was kind of in robot mode then, just grabbing as many as I could and pulling them over the rail and motioning them and taking them under the stage. So I don't know what happened to her. I know a lot of people didn't even realize they were hit. Just because I guess the adrenaline going in them, you know, they didn't realize it. And, after a couple of different volleys, I was going back and forth from that area to the catwalk. And when I thought that there was pauses in the shooting, but you really couldn't figure out when it was over. It was kind of hard to distinguish, are they still shooting or is it safe, you know? And I could hear the rail, the things and ground being hit around me, but my mind kind of blocking out some of the gunfire because I just kind of heard it for so long that it just kind of like, I blocked it out and was kind of focusing on trying to help as many people as I could. And I got separated from my mom, and I went back to where I left my girlfriend and my mom's friend. They were still under the stage where I hid them. So I got them out, and then we proceeded down the middle aisle towards the sound booth. And I wanted to keep us together and near the stage because in my mind I was fighting to figure out if this was real or not, and I just kind of wanted to, at worst case scenario, believe that it is real and act accordingly of it being real. And I knew that if it was a mass shooting like it is, they're going to be aiming for the exits. They're going to be trying to funnel everybody out the exits, probably mow everybody down as they're coming out the exits. So I didn't want to go to the exits, and I didn't want to stay out in the open. So the under the stage was the only thing I could think to be safe. And once the shooting stopped, I went out and tried to help some victims that were still down, and they cut the lights off on us. And I remember I went to a security guard and asked him, like, you know, what the hell? Like, you know, the light, why did you cut the lights off?
This is something I noticed. Check it out. You said to cut the lights off. Now I'm watching videos and videos and videos, and I seen one of the videos when the shooting first started. Jason Aldean runs off the stage, and they turn the brightest lights on the crowd, as bright as can be, right onto the crowd.
Exactly.
Like,
They put us in a spotlight when the
I had a young lady on a couple weeks ago, Jasara Lauren, and she was under the stage too. And she said, you know, and she was right over there somewhere to the right of the stage, probably more towards where Owen was. And
What did you say her name was?
Jasara.
Jasara Warren?
Lauren, yeah. And
I'd like to reach out to her and see what she witnessed and what she might know regarding, like, where, because I was in that same area.
You can go to my archives and find the show. I could dig it up maybe and send it to you. But she said that she seen a helicopter flying around. Did you guys see a helicopter flying around over there?
I'll jump in real quick. I'm sorry.
She said that
we definitely did see some helicopters flying around, and you can even see there's a lot of videos and stuff on YouTube where people have looked at flight data, and I'm sure you guys know of the Tucker Carlson video that got released from the lawyer, and you can see all this debris getting kicked up that is pretty obviously from a helicopter in front of this camera. There were a lot of helicopters flying around, and my wife, for a long time, that was one of her big triggers is just helicopters, because there were quite a few. But one of the interesting things is there were helicopters, but there were no medevac helicopters.
Right.
Huh. Not a single one.
I noticed that there were not a lot of emergency personnel, period. Right around the venue, when I actually exited the venue, there was probably 20, 25, 30 people left in the venue when I walked out. And I was really surprised that a majority of the help was coming from people inside the venue who were, you know, actually EMTs just there on the, you know, actually at the show or whatnot. The emergency personnel, I can understand, were probably very, you know, occupied. But what struck me as odd is that an event like this had never been planned for. Like, you could tell people were just totally flabbergasted and confused, had no idea what to do, and seemingly had never prepared for this.
Hey, give me one second real fast. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm right here at the last minute of live radio broadcast here. And if you want to hear this in its entirety, stay on the phone, those are on the line, and head on over to my Facebook page, Mark Hoffman, or the Patriot Nation Radio Network, or head on over to Caleb's page. The video is there. We're doing a live feed. The audio is good. We're being video blocked. Apparently, it's frozen, but the audio is there. You can hear it. We can tune back in tomorrow, listen to the archives, catch the rest of the show. We got about 15 minutes left. So the next day, do you guys all just leave Vegas right away, or did you stick around the next day and try to see what was going on and ask some questions?
I took a few pictures of the Mandalay Bay, but that's all I did. I got out of there. I just didn't want to hang around and possibly end up questioned, or, you know, end up having to spend 4 or 5 days talking to people.
Right.
Yeah, we actually packed up and left that night. And one thing I wanted to touch on, I forgot while I was talking, is you guys were talking about how effective they're telling us Paddock was with a with a bump stock from 400 to 500 yards away. And
right.
It's actually pretty crazy that Lombardo released a number of rounds that he said was shot. And they say 200 of those were shot through the door. And so I did the math on that. And basically, you know, giving conservative estimates to how many people were injured were actually hit by bullets, it would mean this guy hit like almost 50% of his shots fired from that distance spraying with the bump stock. And I don't know about Owen, who was there, but it definitely seemed like there was a lot more rounds hitting the ground and just other structures around us than were actually hitting people.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
I definitely heard that's been one of my triggers since the event is the tinging. You know, I can hear keys hit a railing or something, and it triggered. That's one of, you know, the things that's triggered was me. But I specifically do remember hearing bullets hitting all over metal railings, concrete, you name it. It was hitting all over the place.
Right, right. Now, are there any support groups GoFundMe pages? Because we know victims like you guys who weren't hit, who are there suffering from PTSD symptoms, are getting no relief or any kind of help. Did you guys go right back to work or anything, or did you have to take a few weeks off and go, oh, my God, I can't believe what happened? Or I don't know.
I've been very disappointed and very appalled with the way they've handled victim relief. From my experience, me, my girlfriend, and my mother, none of us have received any sort of relief or anything. I own my own business. I'm a subcontractor, so my work relies on me. And I'll be honest with you, to this day, it's still difficult for me just to focus on getting things done. You know, it's really done something to me that I can't explain, that only probably a military veteran could understand. And, you know, my buddy Joseph's been an overwhelming amount of help with me on it, because concentration is really a severe thing. I mean, it's hard to get, you know, everyday things accomplished. And, you know, most I've gotten out of California Victim Relief is fill out your application. I fill out my application and we get nothing back. My girlfriend's got nothing. My mom's got nothing. Where did all
and no answers. No answers, no motive. Nobody told anybody anything. And it's not. I had a friend over there in Vegas who was doing a tour, and she was there maybe 2 weeks, just 2 weeks after. And I said, Annie, what are the people in Vegas saying? And she said, they ain't saying nothing. It's not on the news. It's not on the TV. The people in the streets ain't talking. It's like nothing ever happened. They cleaned it up, dusted it up, cleaned it, took everything away. And it's like nothing happened. I said, but it's only 2 weeks ago.
It was like nothing ever happened the next morning.
Yeah.
The next morning, when we walked through the lobby the next morning, it was everyday business. It was like nothing had even happened in the Luxor.
Yeah, that's and I've been basically the same experience. Really hard for me to concentrate as well. I teach college mostly online. I teach accounting and business, and I have my own accounting business as well. And gosh dang, it's hard to concentrate on anything, you know, especially sitting here in front of a computer when I can get consumed in watching videos and reading reports and go like, why isn't anybody talking about this or that, you know? And so it's really tough to get back to normal life. It really is.
Right.
Caleb, I've actually had to tell. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Caleb, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I mean, I share a lot of these guys' same feelings. You know, I wasn't there, but, you know, being shot 13 times and, you know, God saved my life. So,
right.
I can understand the PTSD part. You know, I can understand right. that the bulk of it may not have even hit everybody yet.
Right. That's my friend Kevin on the My buddy Kevin on the live feed is saying he's a disabled vet due to PTSD, and he said that, you know, it could get worse before it ever gets better. So counseling
That's
is good
true.
And talking about it, but, you know, getting it out. Folks, Caleb wasn't shot at the Route 91 Harvest Festival. He was shot months prior. And the man's a hero, ladies and gentlemen, believe it or not. as he took 13 bullets to save the life of his lifelong friend that he's known since childhood. And it's to be commended. He put his self between the shooter and his friend. And no one, there's nothing greater than a man who will put his life down for his friends or for anybody. God bless you, brother, just for that alone.
I appreciate that. I mean, really, when I woke up and saw the way everything was handled, you know, I started digging in too, because it affects me. You know, these guys not getting any answers, it affects me. It affects the whole country. It affects the whole world. And, you know, I get a lot. I talk to these guys a lot. I mean, these are just two of the guys that, you know, guys or gals that I talk to all the time. And it, you know, it helps me a lot personally just talking to them. You know, we share the same problems. And, I mean, we talk quite a bit through the week.
Is there a page that you have that's public that people can go to and, you know, see the stories and give support and stuff like that? Or is right now the page you're running a private page to discuss details and where to go forward for victims?
It's private right now, Mark. I mean, I'm not willing to change that right now, but as we move forward with a few things, I would be glad to let you know if we have a public page.
Right. And keep us posted when you guys get ready to head to Vegas and demand answers as you put that together. I think, you know, we need to advertise that and try to get as many people to go with you as possible, because these people are sweeping this under the rug and they are covering something up. I don't know if it has to do with that guy who owns the MGM Grand and his airport scanners that he wants throughout the motels to make millions more dollars. I don't know what the case may be, but they're covering something up. Something stinks in Vegas, and we're going to keep fighting and bringing you guys and people on the show. The media, obviously, mainstream media stopped, forgot about it. It's up to people like me and alternative media to keep this story out in the public eye. Even if 10 people watch the show here and 20 people listen to it on the radio, that's 30 people who now have heard what's really shaking out in Vegas. And it's really horrifying and horrific that people are still wondering. No answers, no calls. People aren't telling them nothing. They can't get nothing from these people except that something happened and sorry. I mean, it's crazy. And these guys are making a windfall of cash with their GoFundMe account. I think the last count I saw was $22 million in Lombardo's GoFundMe account. Am I correct in that number, about $22 million?
I didn't know that Lombardo had a GoFundMe account, but I wouldn't trust him with a dime, quite personally.
You guys aren't eligible for anything from the GoFundMe account money they raised, because Jasara Lauren shot twice, 10 hours in the hospital. Oops, sorry, you get nothing. And she's like, well, why? She's like, well, you didn't spend 24 hours in the hospital, so sorry. We know you got shot twice. You know, we know you could have died. We know your elbow got destroyed and you got a bullet to the abdomen. But that's okay. You don't get no money. Sorry. And that's going
to
be common.
To me.
And where's that money going to go? You know they're going to throw that money into a slush fund somewhere, and it ain't going to go – hardly none of it's going to go to any victims. That's what I believe. I think they scammed the American people, and the American people should be screaming, what are you doing with that money? We donated that money in good faith. What do you mean you're not giving it to Jasara Lauren? She was shot twice. She's a victim. How come you're not giving it to Rick or Owen, who stood beside people who had been shot in the head? That's a horrific thing to see.
And yeah,
I mean, we're paying attention, Mark, to the best we can to what happens with that fund. It's, you know, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. We got a lot of people that are helping us too.
Right.
You know, I definitely don't agree with it.
Well, I'm connected with you already, Caleb, on Facebook. Rick and Owen, if you could search me out and befriend me, maybe we can do some more shows and keep this some way out. I'm going to keep doing shows until we get some answers, because this is important and mainstream media is not talking about it. And we need to keep talking. You know, it's squeaky wheel gets the oil. We got to keep the wheel squeaking. that wheel ain't squeaking, they ain't going to say nothing. So we'll take our chances here and broadcast the truth from the mouths of the victims and the survivors and the witnesses with no spin, no lies, no editing, uncut, uninterrupted truth. That's what we need. We don't need none of that spin and crap they put. Even Tucker Carlson, they shut him down. It's crazy. One guy, Tucker Carlson, trying to get the truth, they shut him down. They don't want the truth. And that's where we stand. I want to thank each and every one of you guys, Owen, Rick, Caleb. Thank you so much for helping us out, get this show off the ground today. I kind of would love to talk to you guys a little bit more privately. But this is cool. It worked. We got through it. It was awesome. Again, Caleb, thank you for helping put this together tonight. And, of course,
no problem.
It comes to the part of the show.
Thank you,
right, Mark. To that part of the show. I got to do some announcing. You guys can stick around. That's what I'm doing. We're going to do the national anthem. I do the national anthem twice a show now. I find it to be very important because the NFL is just disrespecting the nation. Kind of sickening.
Thanks, Mark.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys so much. And please contact me on Facebook and let's do another show here soon. I think it's
important. We'll do. Thank you for everything you do, Mark.
Thank you, guys. God bless. All right, folks, it comes to the part of the show here where we tell you a little bit of what's coming up on the schedule. New Year's Eve, I don't think I'm doing a show on New Year's Day. It's Monday. I'm going to be taking a break. So there'll be no show Monday. Thursday, I have running for North Carolina State House, Alan Poindexter. And he's a pretty cool dude, and you're going to want to hear his platform, what he's doing. We got to stop electing politicians and start electing patriots. It's very important to elect patriots. Do not vote for yard signs. And then on the January 8th, I have Mario Alberto Jimenez. He's running for office here in Florida, and he is fighting child trafficking. As you see, child trafficking is coming out all over the place here in the news lately. And get ready, because there's going to be some lids going to be blown off here on this child and human trafficking. As you see, Trump put down his executive order this week, and we'll be seizing the assets of those involved in child trafficking and sex trade. Guess what, folks? He might be owning Disney soon. Crazy, crazy stuff. You know, so that's what I got coming. That's Monday the 8th at 8 p.m. and Thursday the 4th at 8 p.m. And, of course, we'll be trying to dig up some more Vegas shows. Oh, and then I have Jake. I believe his name is Morpheus or something like that. I don't have it written down on the calendar. I didn't put it. But he's coming on 8 p.m. on January 11th. He was at the Bellagio. Total stranger. Does not know Renee Downs. And they were at different spots in the place, and they both heard the same thing. I want to say hello to Dina, my friend from New York, chiming in on the live feed. We're getting ready to wrap this up. I want to thank you guys again for coming on. Please stick around for the national anthem as we get this done. I love doing the national anthem. I love my country. I love our flag. I love our veterans. Folks, don't wait till Veterans Day to thank a veteran. Thank a veteran each and every day. Here's the flag on the live feed. Here's the song, ladies and gentlemen. Dave Bray.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, hail the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?
having folks. That's another episode of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. www.blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Nation. Go to that page right there, hit the follow button, and you'll be connected on, you know, by message through Blog Talk Radio, or find me on Facebook at the Patriot Nation Radio Network, or the Patriot or Patriot Nation Radio. There's a group and a page. Join both, and you'll be notified whenever there's a show. And until we meet again, Monday. Oh, no, not this Monday. Thursday, with Alan Poindexter running for North Carolina State House, being patriots and stop electing politicians. Because politicians ain't cutting it no more, folks. I want to thank each and every one of you guys there on the live feed for tuning in, and everybody who tuned in on the Blog Talk Radio and joined us here on the live feed. Thank you. Good night. God bless America. God bless each and every one of you until we meet again. Thank you for tuning in. Good night. And God bless America.